Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
One.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again with an extra special edition of Flame On. You, I think, technically will get three in the month of May just because of scheduling issues. But the first one was really April. I don't know what you're talking about. Came out in April, April 31st. Or something like that. But we are doing a special microsode because we have reached the conclusion of Daredevil Born Again Season 2. So I have assembled a small crew here to chat about the season, the overall, I guess, thoughts so far for the series, because if I'm not mistaken, this was actually a continuation of what originally should have been a much longer first season overall. Then we'll go over some good, some not so great, and then maybe some wild conjecture and speculation of what is to come in the world of Daredevil on Marvel Television. And to do that, I'm being joined by Brian from our regular cast of characters.
Hello.
And he is no stranger to our podcast, but is a recurring fill-in special topic correspondent, we'll call him. We have got Joel on the line. What's going on, Joel?
Not much. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It is time to dive into the world of more niche, nerdy stuff. I don't know if this is necessarily niche, but definitely not everyone's purview or... Yeah, sometimes people just don't get around to watching things until 2 or 3 years later. I know I'm guilty of that with a lot of things. We're how many years removed from Ted Lasso and I still haven't watched it. So, you know, sometimes we come to things at our own pace. But we did reach the season finale of Daredevil, and I thought it made sense for us to dedicate, you know, this probably won't be like a 3-hour microsode. This isn't, what was that, Man of Steel? Boy, that was like a 2-hour microsode.
There was a lot to talk about there, to be fair.
And the first 45 minutes was just Henry Cavill being shirtless in the beginning of the movie. I mean, You know, priorities. You got to have priorities.
Yes.
But with that being said, we're going to do this as we normally do with our review microsodes. We will kick it off talking about the things that we enjoyed from this season of Daredevil, as well as and then moving into our maybe could have been better, maybe not our favorite things, and then finally wild conjecture and speculation. There are a couple of leaks. And by a couple, I mean there's a lot of leaks out there for season 3 already.
Yes.
So we're going to go ahead and kick it off. Joel, as a guest of the pod, why don't you kick the conversation off with some things that you found enjoyable about Daredevil season 2?
I feel like there's like a really obvious one that I'm going to avoid because I have a feeling it's yours. So I'm going to not take it.
Then we can always go back and talk about things more or share in the joy together if it's brought up ahead of time. So
yeah,
well, don't hold back on my account.
Yes. I mean, but I've got a kind of left field one that I'll use that. I actually really liked Bullseye this season. I think this version of him has like done a lot to be more interesting than I think how he was in the original series. I think they went a little too hard in the paint with it being like, this is why he's the way he is. And he's, you know, super competent. Whereas this one, it's like, no, he's just kind of a chaos agent. And anytime he's introduced into a scenario, things are probably going to go pear-shaped pretty quickly. I really liked that. I really thought that was an interesting aspect to him. It feels like they've moved him closer to his comic iteration than anything we've had before, which I think is good. I really enjoyed him, and I think where they left him at the end of the season was a really interesting spot. We know a trade was made between him and another character, and he is now filling in for that person so they can come back. So I'm very curious what they'll do with him going forward, but I really enjoyed him. Like the one episode we got this season where Matt has to drag his wounded body as they're being chased across New York City was really great and really good. And I really liked that kind of, you know, tug of war that they had with Matt of like, do I let him die? Do I save him? What is my role here? What should I do? I thought Bullseye was great this entire season. I thought that was a really high point for this show and kind of how they redeemed that character.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big, I'll say this probably a couple times throughout the recording of this episode, but not a big Daredevil fan. Never really read Daredevil comics. Honestly, even the Netflix show, I'm pretty sure I watched all three seasons. I know I watched Defenders. But honestly, I think season three, I might have fallen asleep through half of it and said, fuck it. I don't really care that much. And said, I'm good. So yeah. I don't know. I don't remember as much of that. But I feel to your point, it very much was Daredevil good, Bullseye bad. And this definitely did give Bullseye more layers. And I agree with you that I think that overall the characterization of Bullseye was a lot more nuanced, and something that Marvel tends to struggle with is their villains being multifaceted. Obviously, the work on Kingpin notwithstanding, and a couple of other villains that they've been able to do this with, but I think it gave a much more depth and dimension. It made it more captivating to watch with Daredevil having more layers in this season.
Yeah, and I think so much so in that first series, I think the biggest problem I have with the Bullseye that they portrayed there is like they tried to over-explain him in that way that like I feel like early 2000s comic book movies had to do a lot of times where they're like, this is why this character does this specific thing. And it's like, look, sometimes they're just a villain and like, that's okay. We don't have to like over-explain why, you know, he's psychotic, how he's like, you know, a sociopath. We don't have to go into all this. He can just be a bad guy. And I kind of think that's where they've like dropped him now. So they're like, okay, we're not going to touch on all that. That's part of his past. But now he is just like a really deadly character who, if he shows up in a scene, it's probably not good for anyone around. And so I really like that kind of streamlining. I'm like, sometimes it is just good just to do the simple thing that the comics did. You don't have to make it more complicated.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Brian, give us something that was a positive takeaway for you from this season.
I had it and then I lost it. I think overall I did enjoy, I mean, well, Wilson Fisk, Vincent D'Onofrio is an actor who I've really enjoyed over his career. And I think he brings such interesting, unique energy to every role. And even though his previous takes on Fisk have been, you know, similar and interesting, this one was very more in that vein, but also more muscular. I think they certainly by the end gave him some very almost Hong Kong, not Hong Kong, Kung Fu Hustle level ridiculousness of his physical prowess. The boxing match mid-season as well, like just giving him like this brutality that I think he had a little bit, but it with the duality of that, and I remember what it is now. I'll come back to one more thing, but yeah, no, it like just the duality of his love of the city, I think the way they portrayed it, genuine desire to not just be a, like, you know, kingpin, but really to delude himself to think that he had the city's best interest at heart, that he actually really did care and wanted to do a good job. I mean, certainly at the beginning more than towards the end, of course, but
yeah,
that delusionary path that you go on as a leader that drinks your own Kool-Aid or whatever, you know, and then especially being unmoored by losing, well, we're doing spoilers, of course,
yeah,
by losing Vanessa, another, you know, great character in this that, you know, I think we always kind of felt like she was going to get killed at any moment. I don't know. She always felt a little imperiled, especially this season, a little maybe too much. But I think Wilson Fisk's portrayal is and you know, they obviously eventually like lean in on the kingpin part, which was, I think, not as much in the past. I was going to mention Matthew Lillard's character because I don't think that's what Pat's saving up for here. As a government worker, as someone who gets to travel on behalf of the U.S. government, I will say seeing this, what was his name? Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Charles.
Mr. Charles. Seeing that government bureaucrat like take such delight in the perks of travel, it's so accurate. It's like the thing I enjoy probably the most of any government, like, you know, level thing is getting to go on McMission or travel or whatever, and tour of duty, whatever they call it. There are perks of that, of course, not like to the extent that he had like the million mile, like maybe I hit that in my career, but I doubt it. Like, you know, the fine alcohol he was drinking, like that's not, that's the heightened version of what, but it is funny to make that bureaucrat this both menacing, horrible, like, you know, not horrible. Well, horrible in a certain way, but like this agent of chaos too. And then yet he's this bureaucrat who really is excited about his perks. So love him. Love that role. Thought that was really great. So those are my positives.
In my opinion, Mr. Charles is not using Concur to book that travel, because when I have to travel, it is not that much fun.
Nobody these days, I feel like, gets the same. Like back in the day when I was a contractor, you really could choose exactly what you want and you could maximize your points. These days, it's like lowest cost. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My job's like, you can survive on $20 a day, right? Like, you're good, right? Like, you'll be fine. It is funny. I did see an interview with him where he was on like some podcast and he was talking about one of the scenes that they filmed with a certain character we'll get to in a second. And apparently the script originally had him in a bathtub during that scene. Ugh. And he had to tell them and be like, I don't think anyone wants to see all this in a bathtub. And the podcast was like, you'd be surprised. Certain corners of the internet would love that.
I'm not, like, I think he's aged interestingly compared to what his like weird energy was back when he was a younger actor.
Yeah.
But like, not my type, but I think that scene with them would have been pretty great, honestly. I guess in a fair, I mean,
holding
version.
A toaster over it would have been phenomenal.
yes, no, that would be great.
that would have been
character would. My way. That character well, would.
And so I'll bring this up. I don't know if this is a positive or a negative, but since you brought up Mr. Charles, and Joel, you had alluded to this before. Is Bullseye working for him? Do we know that? Or because that whole like million miles thing felt really awkward, but it also felt like a way to point out who it is to Bullseye on that flight. I mean, granted, he's sitting next to him, so that was a little bit different, but it just felt it was an awkward scene that could be read a couple of different ways, where either he's being marked or Bullseye is, because Bullseye, I mean, pretty much got away. Like what? Yeah. Like what would make him want to do this and work for the CIA, unless Val got a hold of him?
Yeah. There's two things going on here. One is the idea that Bullseye is in the Dark Avengers, which is absolutely from the comics.
Yeah.
I think they were called Dark Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah.
To like the whole trade thing that's mentioned later in that scene, like whether or not Bullseye is, I mean, he's always his own agent. He's always his own thing, even if he's working for the government or helping Daredevil or doing whatever, he's always his own, you know, thing. So I think both can be true, but I think the implication is that was the swap and he's going for it. for now, as yeah. as a, maybe a way of just like finding redemption, because that seemed to be the arc he was on. You know, that's how I read it.
Yeah,
and that's fine. You know, and obviously this isn't the end of all of the shows, and we're not going to see what happens next. You know, or potentially,
yeah.
And Val is obviously very heavily involved in all of that that's going on from the CIA side and the Dark Avengers, and then, you know, with the Thunderbolts into all of that stuff. So that'll be interesting. And one other thing that I wanted to point out or circle back to in your Kingpin piece, Brian, is when you're talking about like the size and like the foreboding nature of Fisk, I really enjoyed, and I don't, they've done it before, but I think they really leaned into it a bit more this season. The angrier he got, the shot would change, mm-hmm. and to make him, because obviously, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio is, you can't just like hook him up to an air pump and just blow him up and make him, you know, size yeah. of a Kingpin in the comics. But when he got, like, when he bear hugged the surgeon to death after Vanessa died, like yeah. the way that the angle or the shot, it makes him almost appear huge, and that anger just makes him larger, and then into more of that Kingpin that we know.
Yeah.
When he was getting mad on the stand, when he was testifying, like all of those scenes just made him so much larger without having to actually do comically large, you know, prosthetics or a fat suit or whatever to yeah. make him bigger.
I think they still use that in other shots, though. I do think they padded him in some other things. Yeah.
Quite possibly. I mean, you know, you can't really do that in like in the boxing match. You can't really do that because he's in boxing shorts and a tank top.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of shoot him from those lower angles and make him a more imposing figure, which I thought it was so jarring to the eye, but so cool to watch.
Yeah, and I think the show does a good job of communicating just like how powerful he is in certain moments. Like there's just like when he throws a punch, like the way a character spits blood across the floor or like gets beheaded sometimes. And especially that last sequence in like the courthouse when there's the rioters and he's just flinging them around like a rag doll. It doesn't look ridiculous. It looks like he is just that strong that they are getting their asses beat by this behemoth.
I will only add that I do think it looks ridiculous. So this will get into our what could have been.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. It's ragdoll is a great way to depict like his impacts.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Jessica Jones. We got her eventually. It took us a while.
It takes a while. Jesus.
Yes.
I had read something with, I don't remember if it was the show director. I didn't even start the whole episode off with the normal Wikipedia reading. Yeah. Like, I guess we did this in the beginning with the first season, but I don't remember if I read an interview or not an excerpt from an interview with either Dario Scartapane or maybe it was one of the writers or the showrunners. We have Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead are the showrunners on Born Again season 2, but they had mentioned something along the lines of it taking about 4 episodes to get Jessica into the story because they wanted to introduce her in a way that felt natural to the overall story they were telling. So I watched the first couple episodes and understood like, okay, yes, they leaned heavily into it. I mean, Jessica or Kristen Ritter, who plays Jessica Jones, had posted a video like, you know, Mother is back and all of this stuff, like, which I guess was a bit of a foreshadow and a little bit of an Easter egg there on Jess's current status within the MCU. But I love Jessica Jones. I have not read a lot of Jessica in comic book form. I think I did read some of the Alias comics. I think, Brian, you had some of the, maybe the trades or like the collected editions. But Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, definitely in season 1. By the time I got to season 3, Jessica Jones as a show was starting to wobble. quite a bit. Yeah. Storylines not as great as they maybe should have been, but overall, I'm trying to think back to that point in time during the podcast. What did I say? Was it a self-deprecating alcoholic superhero? Someone for me, finally. Like, that's how we do. But seeing her back in action, it was like nothing changed. And it's amazing how easily, and obviously, you know, I was just about to call him Matt Cox, Charlie Cox, Matt Murdock, was the same thing. Like, it just was kind of like putting on an old set of shoes and just easily walking right back into them. I love the fact that they introduced Danielle, and it means that, you know, Luke and Jess got back together after their respective shows had ended.
I forgot they left that ambiguous.
Yeah, I think he came back to see her, and then it just kind of like, that was like the end of Jessica Jones. And then I think Luke Cage season 2 came out after that, but it didn't really reference Jessica. It was a little gray in what that timeline was, whether or not that was before or after the end of the Jessica Jones series. But getting to see that, there was at least something. They at least got back together for a bit. Where they stand now, obviously they are in somewhat good standing with each other, because I didn't think we were going to get a Mike Coulter cameo. And this will go into, we can talk about this in the speculation, because it's not really speculation, because the leaks are out there and the set photos are out there. But Mike Coulter is back. Luke Cage is back for season 3. I read somewhere, we'll get into that later, but I read some things and I thought it was going to end a different way. I thought there may have been a shadow or kind of an allusion to something happening, whereas we just got him returning, Danielle getting to see her father, Jessica hugging him, and I was like, oh my God, I love it. I didn't know I wanted it as much as I did until I saw the scene. So I think that was awesome, and it's a very interesting position to put Jessica in, where she kind of loses her powers every so often after childbirth. And I'm curious to see if that is something that they really dive into more. It's obviously been, it was referenced by Mr. Charles, that we saw it happen in the storming of the Freeport with Daredevil. And then I think, the hot asshole, the head,
ABTF guy.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he mentioned it to Jess while they were tussling as well. So it's obviously something that they weren't just dropping it once and saying, okay, let's leave it, but let's see what happens if, you know, maybe we'll get a new Jessica Jones show. I don't know. I don't know what that future is. We can talk about that in topic 3, but I was very excited for all of that.
Yeah. I was really happy that they jumped her forward. I was really, because so often I think with these cameos, they leave the character where we last saw them, and it's like, oh, nothing's happened since then. I really like this idea that, like, in the time we haven't seen Luke and Jessica, they got back together, they had a daughter, they've had a whole life that we've not seen, and I really enjoy that. And I'm kind of glad that we're not like picking up from where we left them in the Netflix universe thing.
For sure. We'll see what happens. What's been happening to Danny Rand for the last decade or so.
Maybe he got better. Who knows? Maybe he can fight this time.
I said this when we talked about Iron Fist before. I didn't mind the show. But that's just me.
The show's fine, but there definitely was another character who had his powers the last time we saw. But not to skip past, I did really like with Jessica, her getting to interact with Kingpin. That was just electric, having those two characters look at each other and just be like, do more with these two. They're so good.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where we go from here with everything that happened, because I thought this season, I wanted more. Like, I will get to that, you know, maybe in the wish we could have or could have been better. Yeah. But it definitely, I think overall the season's pace was much better than season 1. And I'll toss it over to you guys in a second for thoughts on this. But this season's bottle episode wasn't necessarily a full bottle episode. It felt like it was a, this is what I wish Wonder Man had done with that damn doorman episode. Give us all of this, but in the context of what is going on at the moment, don't just stop the story outright. Where yeah. this felt like the story crawled because you're having all this and you're having Fisk by Vanessa's bedside, and but you're learning all of this extra backstory and you're giving this humanity to all like to all these people. And I thought that episode, The Grand Design, which was I think episode 5 of the season, was so fucking good. Like it just overall just it was fantastic. And you know, compared to the bank robbery episode of season 1, which I didn't mind that episode. I liked it. But it definitely was a different tone. It was a holdover of what the original kind of concept I think was before the rewrites and the revisions. But I just think that this was such a great way to tell so much more story within flashbacks. You're bringing Foggy back and having all these pieces there. I just wanted to call that episode out in particular because I really thought it was just so well done.
Yeah, it really was. And I think the flashbacks, the way they shot them, they even kind of had like a similar look to like the Netflix way of looking, like kind of the color grading and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool how they did that. Some of the styling was good on them, but then there were some actors that had obviously aged since that show. And so like there was only so much they could do, but I think they did a good job regardless. I really liked that episode as well, Pat. And I think, you know, I think it proves the point that was kind of made when they decided to make the change in the concept is like, you can't abandon that previous show. Like you have to, it has such good DNA. Why would you lose what you had there? And I think that episode really proves it is like, if you didn't have all that, if you didn't have these relationships with these characters, bringing them back would feel utterly pointless.
Yeah, 100%. All right. So before we move on to section 2, any final positive takeaways from the season that we wanted to share?
I think I did really appreciate the brief moments, though this second season less so maybe, where like Daredevil's not always dark and broody. I know most of the Daredevils are dark. Most incarnations are dark and broody, but there have been some really fun Daredevil arcs, specifically what was his name? Mark Waid's run. And I appreciate seeing, even though it was kind of an odd moment when he just like turns to the camera and smiles, like it was both like jarring, but also it's like, there it is. He's having fun. And they did touch on this, the sort of dark need to be violent in some ways, both between Fisk and Daredevil. But like, I don't know. I like seeing some of the more light moments in Daredevil. Again, though, this less than this, but and I like seeing Karen Page, who is always an interesting character. That actress, I just found her on, like, she's recommended on Facebook. I was like, oh, sure, I'll follow her. And seeing her all the way from, like, when she was in True Blood, you know, to now, I'm like, well, you've come a long way, girl. And getting her sort of, like, paying off some of the Punisher stuff that she went through. I like her in it, you know. I'll complain in a minute, but like overall, I think I liked their relationship. I think that made sense to me way more than the first Born Again arc of him and that therapist. I think that never made any sense to me other than a setup.
We'll get into that. Don't worry. Yeah,
that's probably more in the complaint section. But I think a lot of it was really, and in any moment when Charlie Cox and D'Onofrio are together, there's just such a this is the thing in comics that you kind of see. I mean, it's written, it's hard to like really see it, but like this sort of admiration for like a villain and their hero, or the polar opposites. Like you sometimes get it with a little bit of the Superman Lex relationship where they have these moments of admiration's the wrong word, but sort of this understanding that, you know, Batman and Joker have it in The Killing Joke, I guess. I mean, you know, there's these, and that I saw in moments like the cafe at the beginning, or the diner, and was that season one of Born Again? And then the ending of this sort of like, there was just that, okay, yeah. And I like those moments because it really gets to the human nature of these situations, as much as they are very insanely not realistic, you know, from a, but their underlying human relationship and character is that it's nice to see that like come through. So I did like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Karen and Matt is great. Probably one of my favorite relationships of the show. I think they're so, again, I think because those actors played off each other in the previous series, they're so good when they're back together. It just, it's so natural for them. And they, you know, like you talked about, Brian, the moments of lightness between them, like when they were training together in Josie's bar in that little like hiding place, it's really nice. And it just, it added a bit of levity to the show that is so heavy kind of throughout. And I really like those two together. And I think Deborah Ann Woll, like, I liked the trial of Karen at the, at that being the finale, was just so,
yes,
so good.
Thank you for reminding me of that. I do appreciate that a show that in the initial incarnation in Netflix was a lot of procedural lawyer stuff.
Yeah.
More than you think going back. You're like, wow, there's a lot of lawyer episodes. Like ending it at least at first in this very grounded lawyerly way. I was listening to Word Balloon with Bendis and John Suntris, and they were talking about Bendis is an he's a creative producer. He's a, basically he is not involved in the production at all, but yeah. they gave him a very good credit because they absolutely mined a lot of this season on stuff he did in his, run that was. So it was very influenced. And so, and he specifically, oh, and sorry, in the season one too, with the Ayala stuff, that's Bendis. So the trial of Victor Ayala was right out of his stuff. And he really went deep to make sure he got the lawyerisms, the court stuff correct. Cause so many times in TV, the way they do court stuff is just wrong, not accurate, ridiculous, like all of that. So he really was touched that they actually did a good job with that. And that's such a critical part of Daredevil. So I'm glad they kept that and didn't just go all out Marvel action crazy.
Yeah. And any excuse to put Charlie Cox in a nice suit is always good.
Right? No, I mean, man can suit up like nobody does. So, all of that. I did. This hopefully lightens it up from what I'm about to say about the show. Because I did overall, like, I, especially by the end, I did enjoy the ride.
Yeah. For sure. Agreed.
All right. Well, that was the good. Let's dive into some things we wish would have been better. Let's start it the other way around. Brian, why don't you go ahead and start ripping the Band-Aid off and tell us what you think could have been better on this season.
And it's funny because as much as I really did enjoy the ride, it almost was more because of like the... there's like a visceral part of our brain, right, that sort of reacts to these kind of tensions. And I think I was that energy was riding, was helping me. Also the sort of resist and anti-Trump kind of like, you know, like, let's be honest, let's call it what it is. This is not a take on Trump really. However, to say that the resist movement that Trump's whatever, that ICE, like to say that wasn't a factor in the production of this at all is no, of course it is. Art does not exist in a vacuum. So I think a lot of what I enjoyed, you know, other things, of course, I've mentioned, like was that visceral ride of like standing up to the bully and taking him down. And so by the end of the show, I really was like, you know, into the ride. That being said, the show really does not deserve to be like that lauded. There's a lot of mess in this show. There's a lot of weird character arcs. There's a lot of unfulfilled like ideas and promises. I mean, season one of Born Again, you could really feel the disconnect. And we talked about it like whenever that came out. This was better because I think they have had more time to shape it and reshoot it and do whatever. But overall, I think a lot of it was just the dialogue was bad. Like like there would be, and I really should have written these down. I don't have these handy, but like there were moments when a character would say something and I was like, why is that in there? You literally said something that anyone watching this show could have figured out. Now, I think it's possible. Do you know what? Did we talk about second screen writing? Did we talk about what that is? So I'll remind the audience who may not have heard. So second screen writing, I think it's called second screen. Joel, you're shaking your head, so I hope I'm right.
Yeah.
It's the idea that you have to over-explain nowadays.
Yeah.
Characters have to verbally sometimes say things that are obvious in context or on the screen because you might be on your phone while you're watching it, or you might be on your laptop doing something. And it's a sad reality of what is a reality.
Yeah.
I mean, I was also guilty of this. I was sitting there on my phone or on my computer while I was watching this. So, I mean, it's a true thing, but it sometimes leads to these dialogue choices and these things that you're like, why, what? So like that bothers me. Anytime I noticed that, and there was definitely that in this. I think acting wise, it's fine. Like I said, I really do enjoy some of these actors are just doing some really good work with these characters, but not for the story arc, not for the scenes. There were several scenes that were so weirdly constructed. Like, I think some of the stuff with BB bothered me the most because it was just so obvious. Like, okay, yeah, you're leaking. Like, we know you're leaking. We all know you're leaking. Like, there's no question. I think the audience is very much, but the way they kind of like drew it out.
Yeah.
Like, okay. They, what are you doing? Like,
they played it like it was a surprise and it was absolutely not. And like, it's like, oh, the characters don't know who it is. It's like, I don't know. It's probably the person that was doing this last season. Like, I'm fairly certain this is not hard to figure out.
And then by the end to have the big reveal, which again, we knew as the audience that she was doing it fairly early on. Like they showed her taking it.
Take off the mask and all that.
There was just like some of that stuff. I was like, oh, this is so bad. Michael Gandolfini is an amazing young actor, and I love seeing him on the screen. He played, it's Tony's, so it's James Gandolfini's son. He played a young Tony Soprano in the Sopranos prequel thing that they did. He gets a great role in this kind of tragic arc, but bullshit. Like, dude was not set up well to show this conflict that he had. Because, okay, he's close to BB, and they showed that, but they never really showed him have conflict with wanting to suck up to Fisk and then Buck. And then the weird, like, going to the Pine Barrens scene, basically, to bury a body. Like, that one was an odd thing, too. And I kind of appreciated that you didn't know how it was going to go until you did. But, like, there was just no conflict in him until the very end, literally on his way to turn her in, about to go in the building to turn in this possible love of his, like, not love of his life, but like his best friend, vaguely implied love interest, whatever. And then he's like all cold and gonna do it. And then BB's like, no, but don't. And then he's like, okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, this is so stupid. Now, could it be believable? Sure. People make like chases, whatever. It's fine. But it just felt so bad as like setting this tragic figure up. Cause then you know he's gonna get killed. Like that obviously was the next thing that was gonna happen. So that wasn't a shock either. The stuff with Josie's the bar, and sort of the idea that, like, I mean, I don't know. To me, it was kind of obvious. Maybe it wasn't in the world of the characters, but like, of course she's the one who's got the hiding up there. Like, what the fuck? Of course they do. Like, that was so stupid. The anti-terrorism vigilante, whatever that thing. Again, archetypes. They're bad guys. They're bad cops. Like, they're all the things. They're ICE. They're the bad cops. ACAB. All of it.
Yeah.
But there were times where I was like, okay, you guys are going. You're going into mustache twirling. Scene chewing scene. Oh, and then the fucking, what's his name? The big bad cop. I don't remember his name. Whatever that guy.
That's the one Pat was talking about earlier. I can't remember his name either. We can try to think of that.
He freaking like went toe to toe with Jessica Jones. And I guess the implication was Jessica's powers were failing.
Yeah. But
like, it made it seem like he had some kind of super power of his own. And then, like, they never referenced it again. And then, what's his name? The other guy, the guy that got burned at the end of the scene, like, just clocked him with a gun and, like, he's out. And he's gone. It was, like, weird. Maybe they're going to pay it off
Well, Justice powers were failing.
So it was that. Okay. Yes, I think in the moment, it was a little ambiguous, and maybe this is my second screen problem. I don't know. But it was that moment surprised me, and I think I just misread what that meant. But so that's fine. I can forgive that. Dude was still way over the top. God, what else? The deputy mayor, director of communication, or whatever, that actress who I've seen in a million things. She's great in everything I've seen her in, but like just underutilized. I don't know. Oh, the DA, the fucking DA. Like, okay, this is a district attorney. Now, DAs are not known for being unscrupulous, like evil lawyers. They're usually like the kind of rank and file, just trying to do their public service, blah, blah, blah. This Hawkrider, I think his name, slimy, smarmy, ridiculous. Yeah. And then he makes a fucking pass at what's her name? The new muse chick.
Heather. Yes. Yeah.
Heather. Like what? Like, are you what? What world? Things like that just made no sense to me. And I'm like, okay, you're just, it's like an embellishment for the sake of it just felt out of touch, out of character, out of everything. Let's talk about Heather. And this will be it, I swear.
Well, you're stealing mine, so that we can.
Oh, shoot, yeah. No. I will pile on to you talking about Heather because I do want to talk about Heather. So I will stop.
Okay. I mean, to kind of like piggyback and just kind of like segue into mine, I do think, there is some kind of like, I think the show thinks it's smarter than it really is. And I think they think they're doing more than they actually are sometimes. And kind of segueing into my worst, which is Heather, I think they think they're doing a lot with her that I'm just like, you're not. You're failing really bad. I think as a character, you know, they really want to hammer home that she was in love with Matt. And it's like, we saw her for 3 episodes in a relationship with him. I'm sorry. Like, I don't believe they were that deep together. And this show really thinks she's so interesting as a survivor of an attack who has been manipulated now. It's like, I don't get it. But kind of case in point to what you were talking about, Ryan, about the writing being kind of hackneyed and the final scene with Heather and the mask, where they have to have her put it on and look in the mirror and see her own normal reflection. Because earlier in the episode, she read the excerpt from her book, which was all about how the vigilante sees the mask as their true face. And it's like, oh, y'all didn't have to do this that hard. Like, there's a more subtle way to like show this character falling. And I just don't know that the show had the chops to do it. Half the time, and it kind of failed constantly. The only scene with Heather that I enjoyed was the scene between her and Karen. Yes. And I don't know if that's just because Deborah Ann Woll is a good enough actress to bring it out in that scene with her, but it was the most interesting scene that character had across both seasons, I think.
What does she look like? That actress looks like, what's her name? Formerly from Scientology, was on King of the...
Leah Remini.
Michelle, every time I see her, I think she's Leah Remini, and I'm like, I miss Leah Remini. I love Leah Remini. So, not Leah Remini, whatever her name is. I mean, she's not a bad actress. She's fine. Yeah. She's fine. But the Muse stuff, and I think even the showrunner addressed that the Muse storyline didn't work the way we wanted it to. There was some back and forth with somebody that I read a blurb about. The sad reality, though, is they're doubling down. It looks like it's the next season, it's not going away. So the Muse thing is absolutely unearned nonsense. I can sort of buy her being upset at Matt, and I can sort of buy her being upset in the Karen thing. That's earned. I get that.
Yeah.
I see that. But like this heel turn in this way based on that one incident, I don't think that makes as much sense. You're right. I think that you said it better than I can say it. Like, these actors are punching above their weight. They're trying things that they can't execute. They're making these ridiculous, like that mirror scene. I forgot about it until you said it. And I'm like, oh, that was so bad.
Yeah, that was the thing I rolled my eyes the most about in those final moments. Everything else was like, okay, this is all pretty good. And then I was like, oh no. Okay, keep doing this.
It was on the train of the, that was like the end, like that last, not end credits thing, but like at the end before the credits.
Yeah.
The whole thing at the end with, I mentioned earlier, I didn't say one more thing, the Kung Fu Hustle moment where he's like flinging these freaking little protesters. Like, again, Kingpin in the comics, yes, he's a force of nature, all that makes sense from the comics. I think what I really like in this show, maybe now in Born Again more so, it used to like lean more towards the realism.
Yeah.
Realism, like it grounded. This Born Again series takes it the other direction. And yes, viscerally, it's fun. It's a fun ride. So I'm not like shitting all over it. But like those scenes, like seeing him and also from a character thing, I guess you've set up this complicated torn character, and I guess he's so unmoored by Vanessa's death that this kind of is explained by this, but like, just in what world does that make any sense to just go out and start beating up your these people? Like it almost felt like you can't just fight Daredevil again, so we're going to throw all these Daredevil supporters at you in Daredevil hoods, and you can like transfer and beat them up. I don't know, it was a weird choice to, and then to have that sort of mirroring of the fighting the ATVF or whatever, and then that there was just stuff in there that I'm like, no, I don't think this works. I think you could have just ended. I actually would have been like, wow, you ended it with just the court case. I think that's a bold choice. People would have hated it, I'm sure, from the Marvel, like, you know, I want fights and villains, you know, I want all that.
But yeah,
it was still just awkward. So anyway, I'm done.
No, you're good. Yeah, but I mean, I do agree. I think like that scene was just like, I think that's the moment where it's like, okay, this is just over the top. We're now like, we're no longer, like you said, we're no longer in any kind of level of reality. We're now just going full over the top. But I did like, I do think with that moment at the end though, with them in the courthouse after, you know, Kingpin proceeds to beat the shit out of a bunch of civilians, is I do like that final moment with like him and Matt, where it is kind of just like, yeah, okay, we're never going to get, we're not going to kill each other. We can't ever get past this. We both have to stand down or this will all just like burn in front of us. I did like that kind of end result. It is wild though that they forgave Wilson Fisk for all this stuff. Cause it's like, right? He definitely murdered at least three of those people. He flung around and broke the jaws of those people were not walking away. So I'm a little like,
the deal was made prior to him doing all of that.
Yes, and they still kept it.
So it makes zero sense that they would still be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, just leave. Oh, but we're going to arrest him
before that.
No, they had the phone call with the AG.
Well, no, he never took the call. That was part of Matt saying to him, take the deal and walk away from it.
Yeah, I
I know you're right. You're right from the timing perspective. But like, how would Matt know? Did Matt know there was a deal? I guess he heard it.
Yeah, he was with the one actress from the Hot Take.
He was with the governor of New York.
Yes. Yeah. I just, that whole thing at the end was messy. And yeah, it doesn't all make sense. But from a setup perspective for the next season, which we already know they're all coming back.
Yeah.
Like, yes, sure. And it mirrors the comics because Daredevil goes to prison. Not once, believe it or not, twice in the comics he goes to prison.
So, thing he does.
Yeah. So anyway, what else did you not like, Joel? I want to hear more.
I mean, I kind of just piggybacking on yours. Like, I guess, you know, like I think the show had very clear ideas with like Daredevil, with Kingpin, what it wanted to do. But these side characters, it just really kind of threw them wherever, and wherever they landed was where they fell. I just, you know, I think the BB and Daniel stuff, I was fine where it ended. But boy, howdy, was it a slog to have to watch their scenes to get to that point. And I don't think, like you said, I don't think any of it was ever earned. I don't think there was ever, like, yes, these characters had a relationship. Yes, we could tell, but it was never, we can never tell where either one of them was going to land. And like, it was very frustrating to have to be like, well, we could be watching Matt and Karen have nice moments right now while we're watching these two.
With the crazy mom, that was a random thing too. We're going to Staten Island, like a dig on Staten Island. And I love all the media, like, you know, making fun of Staten Island, because it's kind of funny to me. I think, Pat, you told me once, like, oh yeah, Staten Island, we don't. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, just, yeah.
With Daniel's mom that sells like the knockoff Avon, because I can't make fun of Avon anymore, I guess. I'm glad I liked where those characters both fell at the end of it, but I'm just like, I'm cool if they never, well, obviously, Daniel, we can't, but maybe if we never circle back to her.
No, I want to come back to BB. I think BB is a really interesting extension and sort of reinvention of Ben Urich in a way, and I love that. I actually think even the videos as an idea, they gave me a little bit of like Mr. Robot, sort of that counterculture getting the word out thing, which I'm very into and appreciated. But again, I think they were clunky and didn't quite land the punch. that they seemed to want to with what they were saying. I do appreciate there was actually one visual. I'm talking about Pat and the shots, you know, where it made Kingpin look big. There was, I think, the court case specifically. He looked, and I think this is intentional, he looked like the BB video version when he's at the table. And that was a nice, like, kind of visual nod back to that. So, like, there's moments of the show that really are good. And a lot of it, I think, is better than it should be in terms of the ride. Yeah. But, yeah, like, there's just so much that I just was, just disappointed in the messiness. And yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I just want more of it. Like, give me more. I'm fine with it being not the best. I think I need to go back and revisit the Netflix series because I really did like the Netflix series, at least the first two. Which season was Elektra? Is that season two or three?
Yeah, that's two.
So I think two is the pinnacle, and I think three with Bullseye and all that just didn't do as well, and then all the other stuff. But I want to revisit it and kind of compare it, you know.
Yeah, I'd be curious to go back and watch and just see how kind of like they are tonally different. I just do think, like, whatever they do next season, I do hope they learn, like, whatever focus they give to characters, they really try to, like, invest not only just in the main characters, but also make sure that the other characters have, like, a full thought out storyline. Cause, like, there's even, like, Matt's partner at the law firm that she's just kind of there. She doesn't get much to do. Yeah. Like, it's like you could give her anything to do other than just be here and be around, you know. So I'll be really curious what they do with these kind of side characters or who ends up returning going forward. But Pat, I guess you're up now. What's your dislike?
I'm going to move right into speculation because there were a couple things that I agree with. A lot of things I personally don't. I actually kind of liked. I didn't like Heather through the entire series. But I think her putting on the mask made sense because of the amount of times that she looked in a mirror and saw Muse to finally have it almost come out of the mirror. Yes, reading the excerpt from the book made it feel less earned in a sense because it's, you know, it's telling. But I thought that her seeing the reflection so much and then and finally putting the mask on, why she kept the mask, but that's a
whole
other,
how she got it.
A whole other piece to it. But I think it's time for some conjecture and speculation for season three and beyond, maybe the wider scope. We're recording this before the Punisher one shot gets released and the week following the finale. That was my only other piece. I know that there was a bit of a time jump from season one to season two. Not much, but a little bit of a time jump. But we don't have Punisher in season two like we did in season one. We'll see what's been going on. This is apparently going to also be a tie-in to Brand New Day, the next Spider-Man movie. So that will be, you know, Frank's next big outing aside from this one shot. So aside from that, Joel, what are some wild speculation, conjecture things that you think could be going on with Daredevil moving forward?
I mean, I did kind of do a little digging online before we recorded this morning. And I do, like, a producer has talked about it and said that there will be a time jump between seasons two and three of at least a year. So we will jump forward a year in this. So I'm assuming by that time we'll have Matt in prison, which I think is going to be interesting. I think that's the thing I'm more interested about. I am curious. They're saying that they're going to keep Kingpin in the show, which I'm a little, like, skeptical of. I just don't know that we need him on his own. I kind of hope that's less part of it. My hope for the next season is that they will actually bring in other characters and kind of other aspects of the Daredevil side. The big thing that we've not gotten, I think, from the original Netflix show is kind of the hand. Like, that all kind of has gone away. So I would be really curious what the MCU version of that would look like, how that could potentially come back. And honestly, resurrect Elektra. She could come back. That's a thing she does in the comics all the time. Like, have her come back and have her have Foggy, honestly. Like, because that's a whole thing that happens in these comics, is characters that are dead come back. I would like to see something like that be brought into the show, because I think that's the thing that we just haven't done yet with this. We've done the very, like, air quotes serious, air quotes political kind of machinations of the characters. Let's bring the mystical side of the stuff in. Let's have some ninjas. Let's have him punch those. Let's see what happens there.
Very good. Very good. Brian, what about you?
One quick question. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to Punisher? Wasn't he locked up? And did they show that on screen? He did.
Yes. Yeah. It was the end of season one.
Okay.
I'm just he gets the guy to put his hand in and he pulls him in and gets the key and escapes. Yeah. No, we knew that he got out, but what he's been up to in the time being is what we find out next week.
Okay. Cool. Because I was sitting there like, what? Did they not resolve that? All right. Cool. And I knew the thing was coming, so they resolved it. All right, what's coming? Joel said it. All I know is both D'Onofrio and Cox have a shot. It's not a set shot, but it's implied. I think they both have beards. And I will say, again, I like D'Onofrio. Not a sexual thing. I don't know. His beard is delightful. If you want to go look it up, there's a picture of him against a backdrop. This one is a set photo, but even the one with him and Cox and their beards. It's delightful. In what way? I don't know how that's going to make any sense. But yeah, I am excited to see the prison thing. Obviously, we all want to see the Defenders reunion. That's very exciting. I also, Joel, would pay to see Elektra come back and reestablish that. And just have that kind of, like, the ex comes back, you know, situation with Karen and all that. And yeah, the hand is a huge part of Daredevil's mythos. And I think some of the best non-lawyer stuff we got in the Netflix series was the hand stuff, honestly, the hand stuff. Anyway, so I want all of that. That's my speculation and conjecture. I wish this tied more into the bigger MCU, and it is sort of with the whole, and Charles and all that. So maybe they keep playing with that, but I don't know. With the looming Doomsday / battle Secret Wars, I feel like this eventually will all get shaken up and recast and whatevered anyway. So have fun with it. Do crazy shit. Go weird. Like, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Cool. The only thing that I would be interested in seeing is I saw someone reference somewhere Mayor Luke Cage, that storyline.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to see that because it felt like there was a little bit of, it's been a while since I watched Luke Cage, but at the end of season two, it felt like there was a little bit of a gray area kind of leading to maybe what would have been a bit of Mayor Luke Cage at that point in time. So I'd be interested to see a take on that. And maybe that's part of, you know, Luke coming back. Is originally, I mentioned this, I referenced this earlier, I thought the shadowy, I didn't think we were going to get Mike Holter in the episode. What I thought we were going to get was, because now that New York doesn't have a mayor, was going to be kind of that shadow of Luke Cage, or maybe the from behind as being introduced as the new mayor of New York. And that was how we were going to get, you know, the reintroduction of Luke Cage. But getting him with Danielle and with Jessica was better. So I'm happy about that. But I'm curious to see how that goes. And I'm curious to see how the Defenders all interact when they are back in the MCU and not just the Netflix universe. So,
yeah, for sure.
Only time will tell. Well, thank you all for joining me on this episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us squawk on about Daredevil Born Again Season 2. Let us know what you thought about the season, what wild conjecture and speculation you may have. And we'll be back in just a couple of weeks with our next roundup. Until then, flame off.